This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two of Sharp Money from Las Vegas in the South Point Sportsbook Studio. I'm Ben Wilson in for Patrick. We have Amal here. Dustin Sweetelson behind the glass. We're sweating out some tennis. We set the over-under, Amal and I did, at 12:35 a.m. British Standard Time that this Andy Murray, Stefano Tsitsipas match will end. Right now it is 10 p.m. British time. I think I did that right. They're 9 hours ahead of us here in Vegas.
No, they're 8.
Oh. Well, I didn't do it right.
That's why I would have taken your under on your 12:30, but I wanted to make the bet before I corrected the line.
Oh, thank you for that's wow. Look at them all being a kind, noble gentleman over there. Wow. Surprised. Anyway, 1-1. They're on serve in the second set. Andy Murray dropped the first set to Tsitsipas in a breaker 7-6. This has already been an epic match for over an hour, and we've just started the second set. Let's get to our guy, Josh Applebaum. I told Josh off air, Amal, this is the best 3 weeks to be living on the East Coast from a sports viewing perspective, because you get Wimbledon every morning, 6 a.m. We're about to have the Open Championship across the pond in the golf. So, Josh, I'm very jealous of the setup. He hosts, by the way, VSiN Morning Daily Bets and the Market Insights podcast, if you weren't aware. So, Josh, I assume that is how you're doing it. Breakfast at Wimbledon every single morning at the crack of dawn. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Unfortunately, Ben, you are wrong here, my man. It's great to be with you, Ben and Amal, but I'll be honest with you guys. I am not a tennis bettor. Never really got into it. I'm open to it. And as a data driven bettor, if you've given me percentage of bets and dollars, line moves, of course, I don't know the full intricacies of tennis here. So unfortunately I got no tennis plays for you, but I got three MLB bets for you. That's more my wheelhouse here, guys, going baseball.
Well, you're better than Dustin, because Dustin doesn't even have an open mind. He's like, I'm not going to watch tennis. I don't care. I can't. So at least Josh that, you know. At least got it.
Well, he knows his limits. That's half the battle. Yeah, Dustin, good for you, man.
Definitely a way to describe it.
Definitely
me.
Dustin over there. Yeah, let's get to the.
Said nobody ever until
said
now.
Nobody ever, yeah. The Major League Baseball slate for today. The one play I really like is Kyle Bradish, who I believe has been a very underappreciated pitcher this year for the Baltimore Orioles, as quality starts in three of his last four, and he goes against the Yankees tonight at Yankee Stadium. This is one of your plays. What are you seeing in the market right now, Josh, on Orioles and Yankees tonight?
Yeah, Ben, I'm glad you highlighted Bradish. I'm right there with you. I'm going to back Bradish. I'm going with Baltimore here in this spot. This is a four-game series. You saw the Yankees win the first two games. Baltimore bounced back with a win yesterday. I'm betting on the Orioles to earn a split this series, hopefully get a win here tonight. Now, right off the bat, we got line movement toward Baltimore. Baltimore opened at some shops as low as a minus 115, minus 120 road favorite. We've now seen the Orioles get up to minus 125, minus 130, so pretty much one-sided movement in favor of the O's. And what I like about the O's in particular, and aside from the pitching advantage here and a couple other factors, is that if you look at the market, it's pretty much down the middle. Using our VSiN.com bet splits, it's 50-50. You have half the tickets saying you're giving me the Yankees. I know they're maybe not as good as they used to be, but you're still getting plus money in the Bronx. How do you not take that? And the other half of the public is saying, hey, Orioles, much better team, better record. They've also been bringing up a lot of these young players who are really exciting. It feels like they're just churning out, you know, top 10 prospects left and right. So even though there's a 50-50 bet split, you know, theoretically in a vacuum, a line shouldn't move at all if the tickets are even. We know that not all tickets are created equally. So it tells me that even though the public is split, these bigger, sharper wagers are going with the Orioles, causing this line move in favor of the O's. You mentioned Bradish here, Ben. He's been really good. 4-4, 3.58 ERA, but in particular, he's given up two earned runs or less in four straight starts. He's given up two earned runs or less in seven of his last 10 starts. He's going up against Severino, who's allowed four runs or more in four of his last six starts. So on the one hand, we have Bradish throwing the ball great. Severino has not been throwing very well. We got a line move toward Baltimore, 50-50 bet split. And also, I dusted off this system, guys. I'm calling it the sweet spot road favorite. If you are a road favorite between minus 120 and minus 150, those teams are 126 and 76 this year, 62%, 9% return on investment. We've also seen the O's with the better bats. They've gone 20-12 as a favorite. They're 32-25 against righties, and they've really crushed on the road, 24-17. So, Ben, I'm glad you highlighted Bradish. I'm laying it here with Baltimore. I got around a minus 120 this morning. I love the fact that this line continues to creep up in favor of Baltimore.
I want to go to an intriguing matchup today in Miami between the Cardinals and the Marlins. Cardinals blow that game last night. Now you got Jack Flaherty on the bump going against the young gun Perez here for the Marlins today. Josh, tell me where you come out on this one. Marlins right now about $1.30 favorite. Line starting to dip a little bit from 8 down to potentially 7.5 in some spots.
Yes, you're totally right, Amal. Number one, the total. We've seen a lot of respected money hit this under. Open 8, really juiced up 8 under minus 115, minus 120. Some shops are now getting down to 7.5. I'm going to stick with Miami. You know, I really like Miami this morning. This was an early bet for me. I got kind of a bad number on the Marlins, minus 130. You are seeing a little bit of buyback on the Cardinals, who at one point got up to, I think, around plus 125. Now it's dipping back down a little bit. But I'm thinking we should still stick with the Marlins in this spot. They've won the first three games of the series. Last night was totally insane. They blew the lead late, but then they came back and won from an error from the pitcher who threw it way over the first baseman's head. So the Marlins are just kind of this exciting team that finds different ways to win. They have a really deep lineup. And in terms of today's matchup, I think there's a big advantage on the bump. Now, Jack Flaherty, who a couple of years ago had a great year, he's been mediocre ever since. 5-5, 4.60 ERA. I really want to back Yuri Perez. I don't know where the Marlins find these pitchers, guys. This guy's 6'8". He's like 22 years old, came straight from the Dominican. He's 5-2 with a 2.47 ERA. At home, he has a 1.01 ERA. So he's been even better in Miami. Currently, you're getting around 75% of bets, but more than 80% of the money going with Miami. So it's kind of like, you know, the public saying, hey, Miami's done well this year. Cardinals are not the Cardinals that we remember. Just lay it here at home with the fish. Whereas pros really like that early number when they're opening around minus 120. Looking at the bats, better hitting team with Miami, 264 versus 253. They have the fresher bullpen. They've only thrown 12 innings the last three games versus 14 for the Cardinals. And shout out to Steve Mackinnon's bullpen rating system, which I think is a great resource for MLB bettors. He has a +6 here for Miami versus a -3 for the Cardinals. So I'm going to back Miami in this spot. St. Louis has really struggled on the road, 18-26, 26-30 against righties, just 14-21 as a dog. So even though it's dipped a little bit a mall here, I'm still going to stick with the fish here. I got the fish now around minus 125.
Think anybody out there had a Mets, Marlins, Cubs three-leg parlay last night?
Somebody did. They got lucky, Ben.
I mean, three of the most ridiculous comebacks were Brian Anderson of the Brewers, after they had already blown a two-run lead, throws the ball away in a routine ground out to third. The bullpen of the Cardinals with the double clutch throw the ball 40 feet above the first baseman to give the Marlins a game. And then, the Mets down to their final strike last night. Down 1-0, win 2-1 in the ninth. Pretty crazy. Baseball. We love
absolutely
it, and we hate it all at the same time. Speaking of the Mets, though, Josh, you are looking back at that Mets-Diamondbacks game to wrap up the trio of plays for today. So we've kind of had this debate of, all right, well, that game last night, will that be the catalyst to turn around the Mets season, or just a one-off? I definitely am in the camp of the latter, just a one-off. But Diamondbacks here is about $1.40 favorite throughout the market. What do you make of this matchup here to close the series?
So the Mets are definitely playing better. They've won four straight here. You had Steve Cohen come out, the billionaire owner, and say, hey, we're not going to overreact too much, but it is getting late. So they're playing better for sure. But I like a bounce back spot for the Snakes here, guys. I got really lucky. I was on Miami last night. Break went my way late in the game. Also, the D-backs. So I'm a little upset at Andrew Chafin today because he came in with one strike away from winning it. Gives up a homer, as you mentioned, Ben, and then you lose 2-1 here. But I think it's a good spot to back Arizona to bounce back. Arizona opened this game as low as like a minus 120 home favorite. I bet him earlier this morning around minus 130. I love the fact that throughout the late morning, early afternoon, you're seeing continued movement in favor of the D-backs. Now they're up to minus 140. Big advantage here on the bump. It's not that I love Ryan Nelson. He's been okay, 5-4. 4.67 ERA, but it's more a bet against Carlos Carrasco. On the year, he's just 2-3, 5.94 ERA. But in particular, he had a really bad June. In June, he had an ERA of 6.23. He made six starts. The Mets lost all of those games. They're 0-6 in the starts here. So one good system in favor of the Snakes would be a non-division home favorite getting steam 5 cents or more. So you don't have to worry about a divisional dog angle. You have the last at bat, you have the crowd, but most importantly, you're seeing the line move in your direction. Those teams are 177 and 111 this year, 62%. Also, Arizona off a loss. I know they've lost the first two this series, but they've been pretty good in terms of bouncing back. They're 21-15, nearly 60% off a loss. And also bullpen rating system. Again, I think it's really important here. You get a tight game late, you know, who's going to nail that down the save or keep it close? Who's going to give it up? Arizona's got a big advantage here. They're a plus 10 versus a minus 5 for the Mets. And also another angle here, David Robertson, who, you know, was great, kind of felt like he was washed up. Now he's good again. He's got a 1.88 ERA, but he's pitched three of the last 4 days. So I don't think Robertson's going to be available tonight. So I'm going to back the Snakes to get back on track, bet against Carrasco. I love the fact that from really as soon as this line dropped, overnight, morning, early afternoon, it's all been moving here toward Arizona. You're not getting the best number anymore, but it tells me that pros are still digging the Snakes, even though this line's getting worse. So I'm laying it here with the D-backs here tonight.
Josh, right now we have here at South Point minus 140 on the Arizona Diamondbacks. What's a number you think that's still playable for somebody who may not have gotten an earlier number?
Yeah, so I think it's a great question, Amal. I know a lot of bettors who map their own number, or like professional bettors who set their own numbers, they'll say, hey, I like this game until this point. At that point, there's no longer value. To me, it's up to you as a bettor what you feel comfortable with. Now, obviously, I think it's a gift and a curse. When you see a line move a lot, on the one hand, it's like, hey, I'm not getting a good number. The line's going away from me. But then you got to ask yourself, why are you not getting a good number anymore? Mostly because wise guys really hit that number. So you're playing this kind of eternal back and forth where you want to be with the sharps, but you don't want to get a bad number. To me, Amal, I'm still going to play this, you know, shop around. That's the beauty of legalized sports betting. Now there's so many different legal states, different options, you know, in our VSiN newsletter, VSiN.com/newsletter. We give a bunch of great promos here to open up that extra account that you've been waiting for. So if you can find it, anything under minus 140, I see on my live odds page a 137 out there. That's what I'd be looking toward. But again, always shop around to get the best price you can find.
I see 136, the best number I'm seeing at WinBet right now as we shop around the market. Josh Applebaum joining us here on Sharp Money. Give him a follow at Josh_insights on Twitter. As always, Josh, great to catch up with you. Very jealous of your proximity to the Eastern Seaboard. Take advantage of that, please. Come on, don't let that go to waste, all right?
No, I appreciate it. Let me get back to Wimbledon, guys. I got some tennis sweats to get back
to.
Yeah,
there we go. Well, we love to hear that. The baseball that is underway already, we mentioned earlier, Michael Lorenzen and the Tigers in the vein of classic. Oh, if only I knew it would be that easy. Would have laid $1.80. He beats Hayden Harris in the sad sack. Oakland A's 9-0. There's $1.80 favorites. Now, that also was over if you bet it early, but a push if you bet it late. Opened 8.5, closed 9. And seeing right now, Freddy Peralta and the Brewers on top of Marcus Stroman and the Cubs. Cubs got a couple back after that Christian Yelich 3-run homer. 4-3 right now, bottom 6 for the Brewers, who were $1.15 favored. And then the Reds on top of the Nationals going to the bottom of the 5th. 1-0 there for the Reds, who were a plus 105 dog on the road. But Nats, 2 on, 2 out. That could be a first 5 sweat if there ever was
one. Well, Ellie De La Cruz had the ball about a week before the runner got there, and he made the tag very late.
Interesting. We will go to our 3-point stance when we return right here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com to check the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 10 minutes. You can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not only today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits are another way VSiN is here to make you a smarter, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. I really hope our producer, Dustin Swielsen, did not have either the Cubs first five nor the Reds first five, because those were two pretty brutal ways to lose them all. You were mentioning the Ellie De La Cruz plays we were going to break. I did not realize until I saw the replay how big of a gaffe that actually was, as the Nats get a 2-run, 2-out single to take the first 5-2-1.
Yeah, I mean, it was an opportunity for Cincinnati to get out of the inning. Farmer steps off, throws the ball to second base, and I think Jonathan India threw the ball to De La Cruz, and he tries to get C.J. Abrams at third base. Doesn't make the tag. Like, he just kind of put the glove down and Abrams slides around it. Was called out in live action, and then the replay changed the call, and we see it become a huge play as there was then runners on second and third, and then a base hit by Lane Thomas scores 2 runs, and now the Nationals lead 2-1 in the top of the 6th.
Brutal. And meanwhile, there was the Cubs led 1-0 in that Brewer game. 4 spot in the 5th of the Brewers. So not only the first 5 for Milwaukee, but also that first 5 over. Very fortunate wins there. Now 4-3 Brew Crew going to the 7th. I'll assume by the silence, Dustin, I mean, you did not get screwed by either of those. So
no, I have the Cubs full game.
Okay.
That's the issue.
So it could be worse. Well, Brewers bullpen.
We just talked about how good they've been. Don't try to talk yourself into this.
Have you watched what's happened the last... I mean, last night, I guess.
In fairness, I don't know who Pagero is, and he's pitching right now.
Don't you have the Brewer futures?
Yeah, but I don't know who. I gave up on them. I think they stink, but they're still there somehow. I have 40-1 on them. That's preseason. I think I can get like almost the same number
probably
now. 28-1.
So you're technically beating the market, Dustin. Good
technically.
Good job, man. Okay. Okay. I assume they're not included in your 3-point stance for today, are they?
You know what? They're hitting like a football team. I don't know what that means. Anyway.
I'll try to figure that one out. Okay.
So there was one ticket in Dead or Alive that maybe we can tie into 3-point stance as well. So MVP, Brock Purdy is 50-1. I want to know where you guys come down on Brock Purdy, because I think we all agree that that's the most loaded roster in the NFL. Both sides of the ball are pretty elite in San Francisco. I do have concerns about him, but at 50-1, if this team goes on an incredible run, think about what you'd expect the payoff to be awards-wise for San Francisco, where if they have a great season, they win 14, 15 games, could Brock Purdy be in the mix for MVP? Yesterday, or July 4th, I want to say it was, so it's 2 days ago, Kyle Juszczyk, the fullback, Harvard grad, went on the Rich Eisen show, and he had this to say about his signal caller.
When I describe Brock to people, and I truly, like, this is the biggest compliment that I could ever receive, is, like, I say he's a football player. Like, the guy has just played a lot of ball. He started, since he was a freshman at Iowa State. So he played a lot of games. And you have, you know, it when you're playing that position, especially a quarterback, you just need those reps. You need those live reps, those live bullets, and just certain little things, timing things, natural reactions, they just get ingrained in your head, and you're just not thinking as much out there. You're just reacting. And I felt like that's what he was doing. If he was just going out there and he was reacting, he didn't have to think about it as much. And it sounds so much easier than what it really is. Like, to have the confidence to do that as, you know, the last pick of the draft, rookie, you're the first year in this offense, to have the trust in Kyle to, all right, this is what Kyle told me to do during the week when we did the install. All right, I'm just going to go do that, and I'm going to react. I'm not going to overthink it. And I felt like that's what he really did. He was so well prepared that he didn't have to overthink things.
So that's Kyle Juszczyk from the Rich Eisen Show. I appreciate that Dustin qualified him coming on by saying he went to Harvard. So we're supposed to we now assume that means more, apparently.
It sounded like a high school coach in Georgia. I wasn't sure if he was at Dunwoody or Valdosta.
Where did you hear a
football? He's a football player.
That's McCarthy's, like, favorite line.
That's basically what he said. Oh, he's a football player. Listen. By the way, congratulations to both of you, because you guys have managed to give a worse pick after pick after pick today. First one, I don't remember what it was, and then he
Mets World
you.
Series.
Mets,
I went McCarthy Coach of the Year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This one tops it all. This guy's got no shot to win, and here's why. You've got Deebo Samuel. They've got arguably five players in the National Football League that are the best at their individual positions. They're so talented that you could take 20 quarterbacks and put them on the Niners, and they've got a chance to go 13-4. He's not going to put up statistics. This is a run-first team. You got CMC. You got Deebo Samuel. Elijah Mitchell. I love Mitchell. What's he out of? Louisiana Lafayette?
Yeah.
This kid can play. They're so deep at the running back position. Shanahan wants to run the football. I mean, to me, he's not. This is actually at 50-1. The odds are way too short on him. I'd rather take Daniel Jones or Jordan Love or Trey Lance at 50-1 than Brock Purdy.
I completely agree. And I think two statements can be true. You can really like what Brock Purdy is as a player and a
Correct.
Game manager. And
Correct.
I've been a fan of his since he came in the league. I think he is a totally adequate piece given the cog of that system. But the other statement can also be true, which is that I would never tie my money up.
By the way, Kyle Juszczyk probably did not have a higher ACT score than Ben Wilson. I can guarantee you that.
By the way, I'm not saying I've been pretty adamant all offseason that I think defensive coordinators are going to figure out Brock Purdy with a whole offseason here. I just think situationally, he is the quarterback of what we see as the best roster in the league. He has a ton of weapons to make his life easier. He has a very advantageous offense for a quarterback to play in, to put up decent numbers. If they have a tremendous run this year and win 15, 16 games, there is a chance he could be in the mix at 50-1.
There's a chance, sure.
I also would rather bet Sam Darnold to be comeback player of the year at around the same price.
CMC at 80-1 is a better bet than Purdy at 50-1.
Fair. That's a fair point.
All I'm saying is, because, first of all, this team's going to run the ball, right? That's their identity first, toughness and running the football. Second, this award has become about statistics. Mahomes, Burrow, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, Trevor Lawrence. These guys are all going to put up statistics. Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson. His stats are not going to come even close to what these guys are going to put up.
I agree.
We're all just assuming, too, even though all the reports have been good about the rehab, that he's just going to be hunky-dory, good to go from day one. Nobody's even thinking about that.
I'm very concerned about that.
You are.
I think they're taking it way too lightly.
Well, let's say he passes everything, he's good to go, he's your week one starter. We saw what happened in the NFC Championship game against Philadelphia. Eagles were the first team that said, you know what? We're just going to blitz the hell out of San Francisco. Let's just see what happens. And what happened on the first drive? He's knocked out of the game, couldn't get rid of the ball fast enough, and he was done. I have to think so many defenses will go, all right, Kyle Shanahan, you want to go pre-snap motion every play and throw everything exotic at us? Well, let's just send pressure every single time and see what Purdy's really made of. And that could very well That'd be a recipe for disaster for him.
Are you guys with me that it's San Francisco and Philadelphia in the NFC and it's everybody else, like, by a large... I know we talked about Dallas. I'm talking about the perception people have Dallas, but I think there's a large margin between those two teams and everybody else.
Yeah, and I don't think Dallas isn't there yet for me. A lot of people are high in Seattle, and I just don't see.
Yeah, they smoke weed there. That's why. But they're not actually high on the Hawks. There's no chance you're high on this team. Go look at their schedule from last year and who they beat. They beat nobody. And by the way, the 49ers beat them down like Alabama when they play a team from the SEC East.
Here's the question, though. Who is the team if it goes San Francisco, Philly, then Dallas?
Yes.
Who's the next team on your list in your power rankings? Minnesota, Detroit, New Orleans, Carolina, Seattle, the Rams?
Minnesota won 5 games last year by 3 points exactly. I'm going to tell you, I think the Saints are dangerous.
I could see the Saints being absolutely awesome, and I could see them also being horrible.
Quick question for you guys, okay? Here's the rundown from the NFC for odds for in order. Eagles, Niners, Cowboys, Lions, Seahawks, Saints, Vikings, and Giants, those 8 teams. Take away the Eagles and the 49ers. Of those 6 remaining teams, tell me which quarterback is better than Derek Carr out of Dak Prescott, Jared Goff, Geno Smith, Kirk Cousins, and Daniel Jones.
I will counter with, tell me which coach is worse on that list than Dennis Allen.
That's a really good point, counter.
Ben. That's a great point.
It's a good counter.
Ben's not wrong in his statement, but I'll still take my chances with the guys on the field than the ineptitude on the sideline.
I get it. Dustin, you had said pre-show maybe we'd talk about the 5 coaches we love betting on the most. I know the 5 coaches I cannot stand betting on, and I hate to ever have a ticket on, and Dennis Allen is right up there at the top.
I think the Saints in his tenure have won 2 games in a row. I believe it's 3 times or twice.
Yeah, but that roster they didn't have a quarterback.
I agree with you. That's my whole point. That's why.
They were in a position where he legitimately coached them 2 losses in 2 games where they were in complete control of. Despite the defense had all the ability to carry them, and now they obviously had the quarterback, and they were still in a position to win games last year, and he sabotaged it himself single-handedly.
You're not wrong in any of what you said. They got Olave, they got a healthy Michael Thomas, they got Derek Carr. I think this team's going to be better than people realize.
Taysom Hill goes back to being a gadget guy, which helps.
Yes.
They have a good defense. Derek Carr's never had weapons like this or a defense like this.
And they're in the worst division in football.
Facts.
That is also true. I wonder what Mike Florio has to say about the New Orleans Saints, as well as the state of gambling in the NFL. So we are a sports betting show. We'll have Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk, NBC Sports, join us on the other side. Fun Thursday edition of Sharp Money right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Our second hour of Sharp Money rolls on from Las Vegas. Such a fun time of year. We're starting all of our NFL breakdowns on the show with Amal Shaw. I'm Ben Wilson, Dustin Sweetelson behind the glass. And right now we welcome him in from Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports NFL Insider. He is Mike Florio. Also, his new book is out, by the way, Father of Mine, which has been out for a couple of months. I certainly go ahead and check that out. Mike, we appreciate the time. And you know, the big story, at least from our vantage point in the betting world, has been some of these suspensions that have been handed down over the last couple of weeks. And I wanted to get your take just on how the NFL is letting players know about the new rules that have come out, where Nicholas Petit-Frere, the O-lineman in Tennessee, claimed he was never even made aware of the rules he was breaking. So from your sources, from the people you've talked to, how is the NFL going about that? And what is the actual education like behind closed doors there on the gambling front?
Well, you know, there's a fundamental difference when an employer has a policy. If it wants simply to get the employee to sign an acknowledgement form that they've received the policy and they understand it, and then there's the employer who wants the employee to truly understand it. And I think the NFL's approach before this season, this offseason, was more about being able to say, hey, don't blame us. We distributed the policy, and we have a perfunctory training program that may or may not fully explain to the players what they can and can't do. And what we've seen is 10 players who have been suspended over the past 18 months or so, and a sense that the policy isn't as clear as it needs to be. And the policy reads like it was written by lawyers for lawyers. It's not something that is easily understandable. And I know of at least one team, maybe more, that they've taken the 8-page policy and rewritten it in English so that players understand it, and that everyone understands the rules that apply to non-players, the rules that apply to players, what you can do, what you can't do. Examples need to be in there. The NFL's rule book, for example, has specific scenarios that will help people understand how a rule applies, and they just never did that. This year, I feel like they're trying to do it. So now we've gotten through phase one. No one can say they're not aware of a policy on gambling, and no one can say they don't at least have access to someone who could explain to them what the policy means and where the lines are as to what you can and can't do. There are other issues that I think the league needs to be concerned about, but I think at least for now, there's enough there that no one is going to shed any real tears for players who step on the wrong side of the line, because you know there's a line there. You may not know exactly where it is, but you know there's a line there, and you're on notice that you better figure out where it is and how it works.
Mike, you mentioned something. I was going to ask you something completely different, but you said there's some other areas the league should be concerned. And what are some of those areas?
Well, there are, for example, concerns regarding the handling of inside information. How would the NFL ever properly enforce, investigate, determine whether or not inside information is being misused? How is that information even being managed when you're talking about knowledge of the game plan, not just the players and the coaches, but administrative assistants, people who have access to the online and other digital properties, the playbooks, et cetera? Is there a scripting of 15 plays to start the game? Who sees that when it's written on a whiteboard somewhere? Does the person who comes in and empties the trash can have access to that? So getting your arms around inside information and making sure it's not misused is a big problem. Agents, what they can and can't do is kind of an open question as it relates to the league, because they don't have jurisdiction over the agents. And the most important thing to me, and this is the easiest fix for a player who's determined to gamble, you just have someone else do it. Yep. You give someone else your money and they go do it on their phone, friend, associate, family member, whatever. And if you're discreet about it, the NFL is never going to know you did it. So there's a lot of different ways and a lot of different problems and a lot of different issues that the NFL should be concerned about. I'm not sure that they are. And it gives the NFL a certain amount of cover if they can just create this impression, hey, look at these suspensions. The gambling policy must work. We're catching people who are violating it. Well, you've got people who are going to be smart enough to violate it in ways that you're never going to catch them. And we just sit back and hope there isn't some big controversy someday where it all explodes.
Yeah, I think you make some great points, especially the one about giving information to a friend and somebody else could potentially do that. But because of the amount of money that players are making today, I always thought once this got legalized, it would be a preventative measure in terms of players potentially putting themselves at risk. I always say Calvin Ridley made the worst bet in the history of sports. He bet $1,000 to lose, what, $10, $11 million? I forgot how much his salary was that year. So is that somewhat been something that's resonated with the players, or is this still a fear? Because I've seen a lot of players gamble in the casinos playing blackjack or playing high-stakes baccarat simply because they're so competitive. I don't know necessarily if it's a gambling problem, but it's something just competitive in their nature and their DNA.
I think that a young man, full of testosterone, competitive drive, addicted to that dopamine rush that comes from winning and losing, plenty of disposable income, the ingredients are there for a gambling addiction to develop. And it could be that a lot of these guys come to the NFL with a gambling addiction. And what is the NFL doing to spot those guys and intervene? Surely it can't just be punitive and thou shalt not, with no understanding or appreciation given to the possibility that this person may have a problem. And, you know, the other side of this, too, because it would be so much easier if the rule for players was you just can't bet on any sports, period, like it is for all non-players. For all non-players, you can't bet on any sports ever, anywhere, anytime. For players, there's this, well, you can, but when you're not at work. And if you're traveling on business, you can't do it. If you're in your hotel room on the road, you can't do it. And Jameson Williams reportedly found that out the hard way. Why do they let players bet at all? It's not collectively bargained. They don't have to give players the right to bet on anything. Why are they doing it? And my on-air partner, Chris Sims, has a conspiracy theory that actually may have some merit. He thinks the sports books want the players to be allowed to bet on other sports because they're young, they're full of testosterone, they're rich, they're still naive enough to think they can win, and they're going to piss away a lot of their money. That's why they're allowed to bet. At least that's his theory, because the sports books want their cash.
Interesting. Chris Sims, conspiracy theorist. I didn't realize.
It's not a conspiracy.
I agree with Chris. Yeah.
I think, Mike, that's a valid point.
Right? No,
where are you going to find a clientele that's 21 and above that it makes a seven-figure income and has one other thing that causes problems on your hand? Enough time to be able to do this.
Yeah. No question. Totally,
that's right.
Totally
makes sense. They got downtime in the offseason, and it's basketball season after the NFL season ends, and the NBA playoffs going on, and there's action. I need action, and I got all this money, and I can either go buy another Ferrari, or I can just, you know, have something that gets my attention, that gets my juices flowing, and it gives me a reason to watch this game, and I'm more excited when I watch this game. It almost feels like I'm playing in the game because I have skin in it. Mm-hmm.
So I have the image of an NFL player like doing what Amal does at 2 a.m. and watching Bad Homburg, you know, betting on the WTA late at night. Mike Florio again for Pro Football Talk joining us right now on VSiN Sharp Money. Still, we're in a position, Mike, where about a month away from training camps getting underway in full force with preseason now, about 4 or 5 weeks away. But a number of free agents still out there to be had. There have been a number of reports around where could former Minnesota Viking running back Dalvin Cook end up. What is the latest from what you've been hearing as far as some of those teams on the East Coast that have at least thrown themselves in the mix, but as of now, we really don't know for sure where Cook is actually going to end up here for 2023.
Well, you know, initially it looked like he was going to go to the highest bidder, but no one emerged in the same ballpark as what he was going to make from the Vikings, $10.4 million this year. So then he started talking about going somewhere where he could win a Super Bowl. He was asked what he meant by that, and he mentioned the Jets and the Dolphins, and now the Patriots are creeping into this. And this is fascinating to me, because if you get him, you're keeping two of your division rivals from getting him. And if the Patriots are serious about trying to not be left in the dust by the Bills, the Dolphins, and the Jets, why not get Cook if he's otherwise going to go to the Jets or the Dolphins? And you know, the Dolphins have been an obvious destination for Cook for a while now. He's from Miami. The Jets, at some point several weeks before he was released, I started to hear that he was a possibility there because of Breece Hall's ACL recovery, and they're not 100% sure he's going to be good to go, and they're all in with Aaron Rodgers, so they need a weapon in the backfield. So the Patriots, who, look, Bill Belichick, I mean, he's sniffing around DeAndre Hopkins kind of openly. I think he's being more discreet if he's interested in Dalvin Cook, because he doesn't want one of these other teams to close the deal, and maybe he does decide he needs this. And the thing about the AFC East, when you look at their schedule this year, the teams they play out of the division, they play every team from the AFC West, they play every team from the NFC East. That's half your schedule. And then you have the round robin home and home against each other. You got a lot of tough games on your schedule this year, and it may be that only the team that wins that division gets to the playoffs, because the other divisions have more favorable out-of-division schedules, easier chance to fatten up a record, easier divisional games, because it's not this meat grinder of Bills, Dolphins, Jets, Patriots. It may be that only one gets into the postseason, so it puts more pressure on all of them to try to be the team that gets there.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see how that will play out. As Mike Florio, again, from Pro Football Talk, NBC Sports NFL Insider, joining us here on VSiN Sharp Money. Give him a follow at Pro Football Talk, and check out his new book recently released, Father of Mine, available where you can get your books wherever. Mike, thank you for the time. We really appreciate all the insights.
Thanks, guys. Good talking to you.
Thank you. Absolutely. By the way, Amal, looks like Tsitsipas and Murray headed for another tiebreak in the second set. Tsitsipas won the first one. They're on serve. Tsitsipas serving down 6-5 has a game point to send that to a second set breaker. I liked my number earlier, that over-under. I guess I'll amend it to 11:30 p.m. British Standard
that's
Time.
That's going over that for sure.
Looks like we're going over that for sure. Maybe midnight will actually happen. We have some more thoughts coming up next. Three up, three down here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app today, and new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Use promo code VSiN when you sign up. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. As we're back on Sharp Money, a lot going on in studio. We have Day Baseball. Ellie De La Cruz, after an earlier botch in the field, just made an incredible play, throwing to save a run from scoring, 2-2 game there with the Reds and Nationals. And man, it looks like Andy Murray, all up a mini break in this tiebreak. 5-2, and he has two serves to come. Looks like we will get a match leveled at a set apiece.
Yeah, great opportunity here for him to be able to get this thing going. And nobody's, I mean, there's, I think, been maybe two breakpoint opportunities in this match, but they both have been tremendous on serve so far. And 50, we're a minute 50, from 2 hours.
We're 59-minute first set.
Yeah.
Hour second set. So we're about to be back to square one, a best of three tennis match. And it is, it is almost 10 p.m. In Britain. So I think over midnight is a totally realistic expectation.
Absolutely.
There. We have three up and three down coming right now. Dustin, who's been sweating out the Chicago Cubs. Cubs also now down 5-3 there, top of the eighth. That's the other day baseball game going on now.
It's and we'll five have a, all. Oh, forget about a track
let's
wall
go,
out.
Let's go, Yon Gomes.
Right on cue.
Wow, that was right on hey,
Dustin, what did I just say, Dustin, about the Brewers bullpen yesterday?
I mean, someone named Mejia is pitching. I don't know who he is either. Yon Gomes, who really is a lefty killer, not really great against right-hand pitching. An absolute missile in the eighth to tie things up with two outs.
All I know is they had a movie on that flight. I mean, it was quick. I said it. That's why I was like, track wall out. It was as soon as he swung, it was gone.
It's hard to square up a ball better than that.
It really is. 5-5 now at Miller Park. What is this, top of the eighth?
Top of the eighth. So being from Milwaukee, I just have PTSD whenever there's a Cub Brewer game in Milwaukee, because as a kid, when the Brewers were losing 100 games a year, you would get 30,000 Cub fans at Miller Park, and you would go, and as a kid, you're like, you would rather go to a game on the road where your team just gets annihilated than go to a home game where there's more fans of the visiting team, and also just getting your ass.
If you're in like
so bad.
If you're in the north suburbs of Chicago,
it's
right?
Quicker, yeah.
It's quicker, yeah.
And cheaper probably.
Well,
too.
That was the thing. So you would get the dregs, you get the worry, just the people that come up so drunk. And there was actually one year I was 10 years old, and in the parking lot after the game, they were handing out T-shirts that said "Take Back Miller Park," and I got a T-shirt, and it's probably the saddest article of clothing I own.
Do you still have it?
I do not.
Oh, okay.
I actually wish I did, because it would be pretty funny to see. But
I want all those old T-shirts from like the mid '90s, late '90s.
Yeah. It obviously was not made by the team. Yeah, they did.
Yeah, no.
Some fan just made them.
Yeah, those
and
are the
was
best shirts.
Tailgating. Yeah. By the way, Murray does take the second set. Also, we are back level. It was plus 185 Murray. We liked that going into the
we did.
Into the second set, and it is now pick 'em each side.
We were all over it.
Well, we said plus 185. He's very much alive. Now, as you said, it's a pick 'em price. Now you can come back with Tsitsipas. If you took Murray at plus 185, you're either going to win money or you break even, because this match can go either way. So I think playing the plus money price is the prudent thing here. By the way, my favorite NBA player is from Greece. And probably my least favorite tennis player is from Greece.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
Tsitsipas, of course, and Giannis is my guy.
It's amazing. Amazing how that works.
They grew up near each other?
No.
Have you,
were they
friends? Do you know the Giannis? I don't think the Giannis Antetokounmpo Stefanos Tsitsipas origin stories could be any different
for Greek
nationals.
Yeah.
One was born with a golden spoon.
I don't want to say golden spoon.
And I would say platinum.
Bedazzled.
Because tennis is a sport that have a lot of rags to riches stories.
the only one I can think of is Francis Tiafoe, right?
Tiafoe is the great
American,
great exception to that rule.
By the way, Allie was texting me from Childers and Neuhausel today, because they were talking about Wimbledon, so they mentioned me. And so she mentioned, we were talking about Tiafoe this morning. He goes to the Maryland games, because she's obviously, Allie Gehring, their producer over there, does a great job. And she's a big Tiafoe fan.
His story, yes. Amazing. Go read the Mirren Fader book on Giannis Antetokounmpo. Unbelievable read.
Mirren Fader, she follows me on Twitter. She's a good follow on Twitter. But I've never read her work. I swear more people recommend reading her articles and her books than anyone else going in sports right now.
I mean, I know Mirren, I'm biased, but her book is amazing on Giannis. She did a profile on Scoot Henderson, the G League Ignite, because I do play-by-play for them, and she was here for like a week last year profiling him. She's everything she's done is amazing.
Wait a minute. This guy has seen Scoot play all the time?
Yeah.
I do play-by-play for the Ignite.
Listen, if it doesn't involve being able to bet on it, I couldn't care less. So here's my question.
You can bet on the G League.
Listen, I'd rather definitely bet WNBA. It's a much easier sport to bet. By the way, could have gotten the Aces at about minus a plus 150 or so, 175.
I might go to a game. Is that crazy? Like,
if you go, call me. I'll go with you one time.
I actually want to see them play. They're apparently from the highlights.
They only win every game by 20 points. It's like watching UConn women's basketball.
Yeah, I want to see them kill everyone.
They sell out routinely. Like, they get great
crowds. Well, they're so much better than everybody else. Now the price for them to win the WNBA title is like minus 225. I know we're supposed to go to something else here, but I got to ask you.
No, stay here.
What is your take on Scoot Henderson? I haven't seen him enough. Physically, he looks like he's about 6'3 and built. I mean, you know who I would give a comp to, and maybe you don't agree with it? Darren Williams, from an upper body standpoint, okay. The former Utah Jazz, Illinois Fighting Illini. Probably a little bit more quickness, but Darren was really good with the basketball. Like, he was tough to knock off his spot.
Yep. So my pure athletic comp is Eric Bledsoe, just from the pure athletic. Not, I don't want to compare his game to Eric Bledsoe, because Eric Bledsoe couldn't do anything with the basketball. But yeah. As a pure athlete, guy's 19 and he's completely chiseled. He is built. He is ready for the NBA game. He was knocked unfairly for his lack of shooting from this last G League season, when the reality is he played through a concussion and a badly sprained ankle, and the NBA, understandably, wanted to protect their biggest asset heading into this draft. So they were very careful with him. He did not come back for the G League Winter Showcase, which most people assumed he would be. And then they shut him down with 5 games left in the season, when he literally jumped over a 7-footer trying to dunk and almost broke both of his hands simultaneously. And the NBA went, all right, we don't need this guy getting hurt before the start of the year. So the biggest thing for Scoot right now is he plays every single game, every possession, 190,000%. Like, he goes so hard every single possession. That is his detriment. He right now is, despite being built really well, sometimes susceptible to injuries. But that is the biggest thing for him. He's an unbelievable distributor, despite only being a 6'2 guard coming into the NBA. He can create his own shot whenever he wants it. Granted, his outside shooting and ISOs haven't been great, but that's a thing you trust that with development will come in time.
Yeah, by the way, that was a great answer. When an NBA team gets to Vegas, you can use that answer just to give as to why they should hire you as play-by-play. All these play-by-play guys are always pro their team. That was a great answer in terms of especially breaking down Scoot and what he can do. But to me, the one concern, I'm not worried about the shooting. I think you can get better with that. Jason Kidd's the best example of that, right? Jason Kidd couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat when he left Cal, but he turned into one of the most prolific three-point shooters in terms of volume and make shots in the NBA. So from that standpoint, I think he's extremely dangerous. But the one thing I look at, it seems like to me, he can get to the basket on anybody.
Yeah.
And if you can do that, you're always going to have an opportunity, especially if you play with guys that on the perimeter that can shoot the basketball. That's going to really be beneficial. We'll see how effective Shaedon Sharpe is in terms of shooting the ball. But I think this backcourt's got a chance to be extremely talented.
Yeah, and look, most other years, the Brandon Miller to Charlotte was more just a case of fit and not wanting to try to figure out a duo backcourt system. But there's so many other years where Henderson would have been. Scouts have told me GMs would have been far away number one.
Yeah,
and would have gone first.
That's why I think people were surprised that Brandon Miller went to Charlotte. By the way, ESPNU right now, because they're changing the channel here in the studio and they're showing Wimbledon, and Pitt's spring game is on ESPNU. What is that, punting on every play? I mean, like, Narduzzi, what else would he be doing? This is a guy that kicked a field goal with 5 minutes to go at State College down 7-0 on 4th and goal at the 1-yard line.
People started talking about him at one point like he was a good coach, and I'm still shocked he's still there at Pitt, because it's a recruiting hotbed. You should be better than that. And there's Milwaukee getting back on top, 6'5".
Hey. Was that Michael Fulmer giving up the bomb?
Yes. Victor Caratini, former Cub, getting some revenge.
Wow.
By the way, you mentioned about Pittsburgh.
Wow.
I think part of the problem is you got a lot of students that are commuters there. They play at Heinz Field.
Yeah.
Anytime you play in an NFL stadium, it's always a challenge, but I don't know.
So who wants to go? No offense to anyone who did this, but like, I don't want to go to college in like a big city like that.
I tend to agree with you. Even though Columbus is actually a big city, it doesn't feel like that when you go to school at Ohio State.
Well, because Ohio State is the point of the city.
Like, right.
That's what everyone cares about.
But it is also the state capital.
Yeah.
It's got major corporations there, like the Limited and things. But still, I get your point.
Yeah, but the most important state employee is the head coach of the Ohio State football program.
So the greatest line I ever heard in my life in reference to a joke was when, after Ohio State beat Miami to win the national title, they said if Jim Tressel robbed the bank manager would ask him, would you like 50s or 100s?
That's great.
Could you argue against
no, you wouldn't. Yeah, absolutely. Manager? I mean, we'll help you load the car.
Yeah. I will echo the sentiment on Columbia, Missouri. Great place to go to college.
It's a small town.
SEC schools are great.
Is there any SEC school? Vandy's got to be in the biggest city, right? Nashville?
Yeah.
There's no other SEC school. Well, I don't consider Knoxville a big city. I mean, that's all University of Tennessee. There's no other schools in the SEC that are in a city. They're all in their own small, unique towns.
Yeah. Dustin loves his power ratings and lists. Because I've been to every SEC campus. Yeah. Power rating, and not throwing out Nashville for obvious reasons, but Oxford, Mississippi, Knoxville, Tennessee, and then Tuscaloosa, because I've only been there on an Alabama game day, so
it's
I'm slightly altered there.
What? You don't like it? I think Tuscaloosa is way better than people think it is.
It's a big, dumpy town.
Auburn. Oh, I disagree.
Auburn, Knoxville, Tuscaloosa, my top three.
I agree with you.
Athens kills them all.
No, Auburn is beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Thank you, Amal.
Their biggest trees died.
Get out of here. Another hour in the books of VSiN Sharp Money. Vinny Magliulo from behind the counter at the South Point joins us in studio next.